Okay, we are back on the record in case number PU-13-803. Before we get started with advocacy staff case, Mr. Kuntz, with respect to the late filed exhibits, if you could just go ahead and mark the first one as MDU exhibit number 5 and the second as MDU exhibit number 6.
We will, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Norell, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to call Jerry Lean to the stand.
Mr. Lean, I'm required to explain the penalty for perjury. Maximum penalty is a Class C felony, punishable by maximum fine of $5,000, a maximum of 5 years imprisonment, or both. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth under the penalty of perjury?
I do.
Okay. Mr. Norell, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Lean, could you please state your name and your business here, who you're employed by?
My name is Jerry Leon, and I work as an analyst for the Public Service Commission.
How long have you worked in that capacity?
Off and on, about 25 years.
Do you have before you what has been marked as PSC Exhibit 1, the pre-filed testimony by Jerry Leon?
Yes.
And did you prepare this testimony? If I asked you each of the questions on here today, would any of your answers change?
No.
Your Honor, I would move admission of PSC Exhibit 1 into the record.
No objection.
Okay. PSC Exhibit Number 1 is received.
Thank you, Your Honor. And with that, I have no questions for Mr. Lean. I would tender the witness for cross.
Mr.
I have no questions.
Okay. Advisory staff. Commissioners, starting with Commissioner Fedorchak, any questions for Mr. Lean?
I guess I would ask Mr. Lean to just first of all, talk through the component of your proposal where you're discussing your objection to how they allocate the minimum distribution system allocation of 25%. Can you talk through that from your perspective a little bit?
I don't know, objection might be a strong word, but typically the way a person thinks of these studies, you divide things into customer costs, demand costs, or energy costs. Customer costs are costs that vary with the incidence of customers. So typically, they're thought of as being things like service lines, meters, some billing components, costs that when you add another customer into the system, that's going to cause those costs to increase. Demand costs would vary generally with the size of the pipe that's in the ground. It varies with how big the load is that you have to serve. Which more load, bigger pipe. Energy costs are more things that vary with how much volume goes through the pipe, not necessarily how much goes through on a peak day, but over the year. Things like odorant that goes into the system and stuff like that would be thought of as an energy cost. And so my thought was that the distribution system itself is there to serve the area, the community, and it doesn't really vary big time with the number of customers. Admittedly, there is some variance. The more customers, the bigger system, but it is more the system itself, and they have a defined system. And when you do get a customer that needs a main extension, something that's outside of the existing system, that customer has to pay a contribution to the main extension under their existing tariff. If you have more revenue required to justify the investment in that main than what you're expecting to get from the customer, the customer is required to pay that difference out of their pocket into the system. So in my mind, I don't really see where the distribution system is varying that much, the cost of the distribution system, with new customers coming online. So in my mind, I think that the distribution system costs should have been allocated to the demand component, maybe some to the energy component, but rather than trying to figure that out and just to illustrate this, I asked for them to rerun it with them all assigned to the demand component. And I'll note that I did just ask for the capital costs to be reassigned. I didn't ask for the operational costs, that there's 25% of those in the customer component too. So I don't know what those are, but it could make the case that the customer costs could be lower than even what they're showing in my study, my revised study.
And so they ran those numbers. What's your thoughts after seeing how the numbers work out and the overall increase?
These numbers on the rerun was the rate situation as it existed at the time the case was filed. So it was before the interim increases went in or anything. But coming into the case, this is where they were at with class rate of returns. And on page 3, you can see the numbers that they had in their original study, and you can see how those are changed with that one change in the class cost of service study running. And you know, the whole class cost of service study is based on judgments and so forth on how allocations are done. So all of those kind of judgments will make a difference in how the results of the study come out. But as you can see, the residential class went from 0.46% up to 1.411%, and the firm general went from 5.3 down to 3.8. The large interruptible went from 12.5 to 9.6, and the rest of them probably stayed about the same. It showed that the residential class, the subsidy that is going to any other classes, may not be as high as what the original study indicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in terms of this customer, the fixed customer charge, your advocacy staff looking out for the interests of customers, what's your talk about your reason, the reasons why you support this change?
Generally, I don't like when there's a rate increase. I'm hesitant to let a class get away with no increase at all. It just, everybody should share in that burden. And so that is underlying my thoughts. But in addition to that, I was trying to lower the impact on the residential customers with this recommendation. My thought being that there is some impact, some change of switching to a fixed customer charge, and that's moderated some by giving them less of an increase. I also didn't like before how much of an increase the small interruptibles were getting at 8-9%. And it just, to me, seemed like a big increase compared to everybody else. And I'm not sure that it provides a lot of incentive to give them that kind of increase, plus with the big increase in the customer charge, to have the small interruptibles on the system. It might persuade people not to be a small interruptible customer. And with that objective in mind, and considering how close the class cost of service studies were for all of the classes except for the large interruptible, I thought that an even increase across those classes was fair, and half the increase to the large interruptibles was just with this rule of thumb that I have to try and keep at least half the increase to any class.
Does the impact on the firm general concern you?
It does on all of them concern me. But I don't think that it's excessive on them any more than it is on the residential. The amount of the increase would be about the same. So what they're, where they're at to where they're going is about the same effect.
Okay. That's all my questions for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Jerry. Just one question, Jerry. The maybe more of your perspective. It seems like we have all these different rate classes. I mean, and we've developed something over time that now we're trying to maybe put back in the bottle, if you will. Do you know how we got to this many rates and this many different structures? And is it something that we did way back when?
Well, I think these classes are always, since I've been around, about the same. There's generally always a split, no matter where you go, between residential and general service customers. In MDU's case, the Air Force made its own, well, they made its own class for the Air Force just because their load is so different from everybody else's. And it was a practical matter to do that. And that's been that way since I've been here, I think, if I remember right. Small interruptible and large interruptible, it seems like that's a good break point and an indication of what kind of customers you're dealing with when you're putting together an increase. So, I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that's fine, Jerry. I think that's kind of the general feel. But the in the term of using sound rate-making principles, do you think there's a difference between having a whole bunch of rates or just a few rates set up? Is it just each state should do its own? Each company should do its own? Is there a general feeling that you have on the number of rates that are out there or the number of classes that are out there?
I think we have a pretty good spread here for classes. I think it's industry practice to pretty much split these like this, except, like I said, the Air Force is having its own class, so it's kind of unique.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Commissioner Christman?
Not using any comparison to what we currently have, but just comparing MDU's proposal to your proposal. Is it a fair assessment to just say that your proposal takes about $800,000 away from the burden of residential customers and small interruptibles and shifts it to small businesses and a little bit to the Air Force?
Subject to check, I guess, on the numbers. That's it.
And do you think most of the residential people end up paying that in the long run through the course of doing business with those small businesses? Or
good point. If the small businesses raise their rates, residential customers using them will pay higher rates at the small businesses.
And lastly, when just in making the comparison between the small interruptibles and the Air Force, it appears to me most of the Air Force load is interruptible. So on the one hand, I'm tempted to think I like your proposal in that regard and that they should both have the same increase. However, it looks to me like the Air Force already in the current system pays quite a bit more per decatherm for their interruptible service than what the other small interruptibles do. So I guess I don't know which is the proper way of looking at it, but I just point that out to hear your thoughts.
I guess I hadn't really thought of it that much. I kind of put the Air Force in their own category, and there's a contract serving the base. The housing load there is firm. It's a residential load. I don't really know what CMDU has flexible rates for some of its large interruptibles, and I guess I don't have a good answer.
Yeah, thank you. No other questions.
Thank you. Advisory staff, questions for the witness?
No, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Koontz, anything?
I have a couple questions. Mr. Lean, would you agree with me that one of the objectives in rate design is to set rates to send the proper price signals to customers?
Yes.
Cost signals?
Yes.
And that's the purposes of a class cost of service study is determine what those costs are attributable to those customers so that they are receiving. So you can set rates that will then set the proper cost signals to those customers.
Yes.
I want to take a little run here with the distribution system. As I understand, your position was that the distribution system is there to serve the customer and really doesn't vary that much based upon the number of customers served behind that distribution system, and therefore it shouldn't be assigned on a customer basis. Is that a fair characterization of your testimony?
Yeah, I tried to say that it was there to serve an area more than a number of customers that are in that area.
But the area, the length of main that I'm going to have to install is going to vary depending upon the size of the area that I have to serve, correct?
Correct.
And that would traditionally be based upon the number of customers within that area. I mean, if I'm serving a town of 50 versus a town of 50,000, that's going to make a big difference in the amount of main I'm going to need, isn't it?
Somewhat, but, you know, like New York City might have 10 million people in this square mile area. And Fargo's got 25 people. So, I mean,
so it's not necessarily a direct correlation, but there is some correlation there between the number of customers and the amount of main that you're probably going to have to put in.
There would be some correlation, but, you know, if you had the 5 million people in that mile, you'd meet in a much bigger pipe.
Right.
And so then that's a demand charge rather than a customer-related charge.
Going from a 2-inch pipe to a 20-inch pipe would be a demand difference.
Yeah.
So if we were building our hypothetical town and we've got 1,000 customers in our hypothetical town, all of which want to be connected to gas, but none of which really intend to use any gas, but we got to be connected. We need some minimum size pipe in the street so that we can deliver that gas to run Commissioner Calk's gas grill on the 4th of July, in case he calls on. We need at least a 2-inch, because that's probably the smallest, but you need at least some minimum amount of connection in order to those customers to be connected to that system, don't you?
I guess you'd need a minimum amount of pipe to serve that area.
Infrastructure to have, so that they can be connected to the system.
Yeah.
And then if now you look at it and you say, well, those customers are going to be space heating customers and they're going to use an average 92 decatherms. And now we start sizing that pipe, and that's more of a demand type thing, isn't that? If I understood you correctly, we're going from a 2-inch pipe to a 20-inch pipe. That's a function of how much demand each of those customers are going to be versus being just connected to the system.
Yeah, so if you had a lot of customers, you'd need a bigger pipe.
Right, or if you had a small number of customers using a lot of gas, you'd need a bigger pipe.
Yep.
You have to look at the demand of those particular customers.
Yep.
And no further questions.
Follow-up from commissioners?
I do have a Mr. Leon, did you attend the public input sessions?
Yes.
Okay. So you heard the objections that the AARP expressed, and they're here today and going to be talking, so I'm going to ask you to respond a little now to what you heard them say then, assuming that it's probably going to be somewhat similar today. They expressed concern with the flat fee for the entire non-fuel portion of the bills, and from a philosophical standpoint, saying it wasn't necessarily fair for customers. It should be more on a volumetric charge. How do you feel about that? As a consumer advocacy, you're kind of on the same page. I mean, you're both looking out for consumers.
They didn't seem to recognize the benefits that come from that. The elimination of the distribution and delivery charge is a huge benefit. And the worst time of the year for these older folks is trying to make their winter heating bills. And in my testimony here, I showed a comparison on
five?
Yeah. It took a look at January and July, and I just had numbers a little different than MTUs. I had 23 decatherm usage in January and 2 decatherms usage in July. It shows their bill going down by $9.55 in January and up by $7.49 in the July time frame. And if you took, first of all, though, that comparison was with MDU's proposed rate design. So my rate design would change that a little bit. It would make the customer charge a little bit less. And so the changes wouldn't be quite as much. But I see that as a benefit, and a benefit to the elderly, too. I'm thinking that a lot of elderly people might be living in older houses and having more throughput, more heating demand, just because the houses are bigger and not as well weatherized as new houses. It's not necessarily always true, but I would think that that the elderly would probably benefit more of the elderly would benefit under this than under the fixed charge, just because I think that they probably do use more volumes with their older houses that are less weatherized.
Mm-hmm. And then they also objected to the loss of incentive for conservation that customers would receive under this new rate structure. And the company said today that they really need to do this to support conservation. So what do you see as being the piece that the AARP might be missing in that, that isn't maybe super clear, that somehow the company would be having to recover those costs another way, or what's missing?
Well, of course, if you want to encourage conservation, you can always crank the prices. I mean, set it at $100 a decatherm, and for sure people are going to conserve.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have the temperature set at 30 degrees. But so I don't know that raising prices on volumetric is a good way to encourage conservation. I think that there is still plenty of incentive with the cost of gas itself to save money on your bill by using less gas. The cost of gas is still passed through to the customers on a dollar-for-dollar basis. The cost that MDU is paying when they go out into the field and purchase the gas for their customers.
Let me interrupt you real quick. So where would, if the company can't recover its costs on this flat fee portion for the distribution costs, where would customers see those costs coming in that they'd be paying for anyway? If as we're seeing, through conservation, customers are using less, so the volumetric charge has gone down and they don't have enough to cover their fixed charges. So if they can't do it this way, where would customers be seeing those costs surface?
If the customers continue to conserve and there's that distribution delivery charge recovering MDU's fixed costs, they get less revenue from their distribution delivery charges because they're selling less gas and they come back in for a rate case, so rates go up. As is right here, this rate design would do what you call totally decouple profits from sales. And so for the residential class. So MDU's profit margin would stay steady regardless of how much they sold. And as customers conserved, it would not cause other people's rates to go up.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Cole?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. That was an excellent line of questioning. The I liked your last point, Jerry, decouples profit from sales. So the you've submitted your own proposal, but are you if the commission would go with the company's proposal, do you see any flaws in the current company proposal? You proposed something a little different, but do you see any major flaws in the company's proposal?
You know, I'd have to go along with the company's idea that I wouldn't really strongly object to it. There's not that much difference between the two of them if you look and see how much is in there.
All right, thank you, Jerry. That's good. Thanks.
Commissioner Christman?
Just to point out that based on my previous question with the small interruptible rates being quite a bit less than the Air Force, which is primarily interruptible, I kind of phrased that incorrectly, and that wasn't a very fair question because I was including the line that I presume is transportation only and in those small interruptibles. And so without that, actually, those folks are paying just even slightly more than the interruptible customers at the Air Force Base. So sorry about that. The context of that question was wrong. That's why I think you didn't have an answer.
Thank you. Any further questions from advisory staff?
No, thank you.
Mr. Kuntz?
Yes, I have one. Mr. Lee, would you turn to that table you referred to on page 5 of your testimony?
Sure.
The January and July comparison?
Mm-hmm.
And the first numbers there, the 2941 times 31, that would reflect the company's proposed rate increase or rate monthly service charge under its proposal, correct?
Yes.
And then you're subtracting from it the current distribution charge, correct?
For yeah.
23 decatherms.
Yeah.
If we were to hold the current customer service charge at $9, we would have to correspondingly increase that 81 cents, wouldn't we, to do a fair comparison in terms of proposals under the rate increase.
Yes.
So in that situation, and I believe Ms. Averly testified, that 81 cents would have to go to $1.16 under the company's proposal of 5%. Would you disagree with that? Does that seem reasonable?
It seems about right, yes.
So then the savings of $9.55 in January would actually be larger than that, wouldn't it? If you were doing a comparison between a proposal of putting it all in the basic service charge or you using the current design and simply increasing the delivery charge.
It would be an increase.
Above the $9.55.
That would be the 955 there is a negative number.
Yeah, okay, right. Bigger savings.
So they would get a bigger bill in January instead of a smaller bill.
Right. And then in July?
In July, that number would be smaller.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to follow up on that one. So what you just calculated would be keeping the rate structure the way it is today. I couldn't quite understand what Mr. Kuntz's conclusion on the bill in January. It would be the decrease would go away and it would be a net increase.
Yeah,
so if the company doesn't get this flat rate and we keep it the way it is, they're going to recover it this through the distribution charge, and that's going to go higher. And so what's the net effect for customers? They pay more in January?
I think subject to somebody plugging this into a calculator, I think that January bills would go up probably close to $5. July bills would go up probably about 50 cents.
And if they conserve, they would perhaps pay less. But what you were saying earlier is that the company would ultimately have to charge a higher rate because they're not able to recover enough under this current structure. So the distribution rate would go up. Or would we have to look at increasing that distribution rate this time so they'd be paying – yes.
You'd increase it this time to make up for what you didn't put into the customer charge. I think the point was that as time goes on and conservation continues, that there might be a further increase down the road that this rate design might eliminate.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Any further commission questions? Okay. Mr. Kuntz, any follow-up on that?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norrell, any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Lean, you may step down at this time. And Mr. Norrell, you may proceed.
Your Honor, at this point, advocacy staff would arrest this case.
Okay. At this time, I guess I would invite any members of the public who wish to present any information or testimony to the commission to come forward at this time.
I'm short one guy, but our color copier broke, so I'll give you guys one and I'll email you an attachment of what it actually looks like.
Mr. Askvig, can you go ahead and state your name for the record?
Sure. Josh Askvig.
Okay. And are you appearing on behalf of any organization?
I am. I'm appearing on behalf of AARP of North Dakota.
And you wish to present testimony to the commission?
I do, sir.
Okay. I must also advise you that the maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth under the penalty of perjury?
I do.
You can go ahead make any statements you wish at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor, and commissioners, the first thing I want to do is thank you for the opportunity. I was talking to one of our consultants about how different North Dakota is and how open we are about our process and the fact that we can come in and offer public comment and have this discussion is greatly appreciated, and that's never lost on me and AARP, and so we wanted to make sure we thank you for that. I've already stated my name for the record, so I'll skip that piece of it, but just so you know, AARP is a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization that advocates for people who are 50 and older across the country who are seeking to promote their independence, choice, and control in ways that are beneficial and affordable to them and to society as a whole. And one of the ways that AARP does that is through advocacy on utility issues. We haven't done a lot of work in North Dakota, so this is my first go-around. I know we did a case probably 10 years ago or so on that, but that's part of why we're here today. And we really wanted to talk to you in regards to MDU's case about the two issues you've been talking about all morning. The first one is the customer class shift issue, and I'm going to boil down that testimony and be really simple. We support the advocacy staff's position and Mr. Lean's position on the 4% across the board with the 1.8% for the large interruptibles. We were very happy to see that and think that makes a lot of sense. That was part of the discussion we were having with PSC staff as well as the company there. And so we were encouraged that, and we were encouraged to see MDU appears to think that's okay as well. The second issue, however, that we wanted to at least offer some comment about is the idea of the fixed customer charge or the straight fixed variable rate, or I'm learning there's about six different terminologies you can use for that design piece of it. And we're opposed to the proposal to dramatically shift that rate. And it boils down to, very simply, our opposition about taking away the incentive for conservation for individuals, older individuals, younger individuals as well, by the way, who take efforts to conserve, and taking that out of the delivery charge. There was a lot of discussion this morning about, well, it actually encourages conservation if you move it all into the fixed charge. And what I would say to you is, well, 65% of the bill is on the sale of gas. We recognize that. There's still a large component of their bill currently under the current design that is based on how much they use. That's part of the delivery charge piece. And under the MDU proposal, that's completely removed. And so you're lessening my incentive to conserve. Is there still a component of it? Yes. Is it as great as what it is today? No. And so having said that, the second piece I want to say is we've never advocated for completely eliminating any effort to move towards more being on the fixed service charge. We think perhaps instead of going from $9 to $17.50 or $18, sorry, I got a little lost in the different changes with the different proposals about what it might be, we just think that that should be moderated. And if you read the petition piece that's attached, we never said they shouldn't make movements on the fixed charge. What we said was that they should moderate that and mitigate that. And so that's really our position. I'm not someone who likes to read my testimony word for word, and so I obviously have the other comments for your purview to do that. The one thing I would say is that we did a petition for our members across the state where we sent out an email. We did in about 2 weeks. We collected over 100. I said 194 in my testimony. We had one that someone printed it off and then mailed it in. So it actually, and I got it just yesterday after I had printed all of this stuff. And in the interest of conservation, I decided not to reprint everything again, piece of it. So it's actually 195 North Dakotans who stated their opposition to fully moving to that straight fixed charge. And in 2 weeks, I can just tell you, having done a number of legislative issues where we sent out emails, getting 195 people to respond in 2 weeks is pretty significant on an issue that we haven't had a lot of education or discussion about around our office. And so with that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Mr. Axvig, I guess before we go on to that, before you took the stand, you handed out a couple different documents. Are you wishing to have those entered into the record?
Your Honor, I would.
Okay. The first document, the smaller one, is that your testimony?
That is, Your Honor.
I think I'll go ahead and mark that as AARP Exhibit Number 1. And the second document, the more voluminous document, I will mark that at this time as AARP Exhibit 2. No, before we go any further with whether or not these documents will be entered into the record, Mr. Kuntz, do you have an objection to entering either of these exhibits into the record?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, but I think they should be a little bit better identified.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Axvig, with respect to what I've marked as AARP exhibit number 1, the smaller exhibit, can you just briefly describe what you've got in that exhibit?
Sure. What it is a probably lengthier version of my stated commentary about our concerns about the MDU's original revised proposal on both the customer class shift, which I clearly stated for the record, we actually support the lien proposal, and then the fixed customer charge issue. And then there is a one-page attachment to that original document that is just the nuts and bolts of what the petition actually looked like for individuals to sign. That includes the date they submitted it, as well as a timestamp, a first name, a last name, their home street address, home city, state, zip, and then an email.
And if you could go on to what we've marked as exhibit number 2, AARP exhibit number 2, and just identify that exhibit and explain what's contained in that exhibit.
That has the 195 individual petition signatures that we collected online merged to show that each of them had signed the petition.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Kuntz, do you have questions?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Asvig, how many AARP members are there in North Dakota?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, there are over 87,000.
87,000 in North Dakota?
Correct.
And how was this request or information sent out to those customers?
So we have a number of systems. For this one, we have an advocacy email database that has about 6,000 active emails on it.
And so this was kind of broadcast to all those customers?
It was, and in the title line, I will tell you the first there was three emails that were sent. The first email said something to the effect of, "Are you an MDU customer? Take a look at this." I'm paraphrasing, but and then the second two in the body of the email always asked if they were an MDU customer or not.
So you sent out three emails. Essentially, verbiage would have been what's shown as AARP exhibit number 2, or was there more information?
The verbiage of the email was something to the effect of the same argument, just giving them a background of where the case was at and why we were trying to collect the signatures.
So of those 6,000 people that the email was sent to, you got 195 responses.
Correct.
And did you do any checking to see whether indeed all these customers were MDU customers?
We did, Your Honor, and Mr. Kuntz. What I would tell you is that 195 people took the time to sign the petition. I will tell you one of them who I know who is not an MDU customer who is on there, but we left him in there for this very reason. He said, "I'm not a customer of MDU, but I have family that is, and while I forwarded this to them, I want the Public Service Commission to know that this does concern me, and if there are future cases that deal with this issue, I've expressed my concern." And so I took them for their word. The only ones I removed from the file, the original file was 233. The only ones I removed were duplicates. Someone had clicked the submit button three times, or there were two individuals one was from California and Illinois. They were probably North Dakotans who had moved away, but they were still on our email list, and I took those off because it wasn't pertinent to them at all.
Well, just flipping through here, and I didn't check every one, but I saw three at least that were from Fargo. Do you know whether Montana, Dakota provides natural gas service?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, my understanding is they do not.
So you don't know why those petitions ended up in here?
The only one I do know is there's one from West Fargo, and that's the one I mentioned previously. I don't know why. I can tell you they obviously had a concern about the issue.
And also I saw a customer that had signed this petition from Sherwood. Do you know whether Montana, Dakota provides service to Sherwood?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, I don't have the distribution, your service area in front of me, but my guess is going to be no. That's why you asked the question.
Your guess would be correct. Did you provide any other explanation here to these customers regarding the impact, financial impact on the individual customers of reducing the delivery charge portion of Montana Dakota's proposal as opposed to or in comparison to the increase in the distribution charge? Do you understand my question?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, I believe I do. What I will tell you is we made clear in all of our communications, including on that petition, that yes, there was a corresponding decrease in the service delivery volumetric charge, but did we do a side-by-side comparison? Not necessarily.
Did you explain to any of your members that, you know, a member that would be using over 92 decatherm a year would actually benefit MDU's proposal from MDU's proposal as opposed to putting the rate increase on the delivery charge?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, we did not specifically describe it in that manner.
Would you agree with me, Mr. Axvig, that one of the objectives of rate design is to send the proper cost signals to the customer?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, I do, and that's why we want to keep a volumetric piece to that so that there is that greater encouragement for conservation.
Mr. Axvig, let me give you a scenario. Let's assume we've got two houses built on the same street, same time, same length of service pipe to that house. One of those houses is built with a geothermal heat pump system and uses 50 decatherm a year, okay? The neighbor doesn't have a geothermal system. They're using traditional space heating furnace, high-efficiency water heater, but it's using 120 decatherm a year. Can you think of any reason why the cost from the company standpoint of the infrastructure and serving the one customer with the heat pump would be any less than serving his neighbor?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, I can only speak from the consumer standpoint, and what I would tell you is I can't see why there would be a difference in terms of the piping piece of it, but I wouldn't know that. That would be your guys' area of expertise.
And would you think it fair that the customer who's got the traditional space heating service or appliances should be subsidizing his neighbor with that happens to have a geothermal heat pump system?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, I guess I wouldn't necessarily use the term subsidize, but what I would tell you is any effort we can make to ensure that specifically, and that's part of the reason we're here today is to talk about it, is as we heard plenty of testimony already today, and if we could find correlations between low-income, low-user, low-income, high-user, we would have said so, and no one has said so, and I think that's pretty clear. We've had a hard time, and we'd love to sit down and talk about trying to nail some data down on that because it would be very interesting and, I think, helpful and insightful. But for those individuals who are on fixed incomes, I can only tell you the stories that I've heard. You know, one individual, the individual who mailed it in, it's the one that looks a little bit different towards the end. The conversation he and I had, he said, my name's Robert, I live on a fixed income, and changing my rate so that I have to pay more before I use any gas is a big concern to me. And so I can only address it that way. And your side-by-side hypothetical, I suppose the answer is the individual who made the investment on the front end for the geothermal probably paid for it in another way.
Well, he paid for the geothermal, but is it fair that his neighbor who didn't make that investment is now having to pay for part of the cost of providing him connected to the infrastructure just because he uses more gas?
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, I suppose that is an argument. What I would go back to is what I heard Mr. Lean say is his thought on the design piece of it is that it should be the service for an area, not the individual household.
Well, we were talking about distribution mains when I was talking about Mr. Lean. Here we're talking about the two customers side by side, same length of service line to them. There's absolutely no distinction in terms of the amount of infrastructure to serve those two particular those two houses. Yet one is would pay significantly less under the proposal that you would advance as opposed to the company's proposal.
Your Honor, Mr. Kuntz, they would pay less. However, they would each be paying some portion of that base rate. It would take longer, I suppose, for the company to recover the cost for the one that has the geothermal. But they would still be paying towards it in the volumetrics that they use, albeit less.
Well, the company would recover its costs under either proposal. The difference is that they're recovering more of it from neighbor A than they are from neighbor B.
Based on the volume that they use.
Or based upon their monthly rate.
On the volume they use, right.
I have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Axley.
Mr. Norrell?
No questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Jeff Goldsackle?
Would you be willing to provide copies of those emails? Perhaps it's in the big packet. I don't know. I don't have a big packet. The emails.
Your Honor, and Ms. Jeffcoat, I would be happy to get you copies of those emails. So let me know how you want them, and I'll be happy to get you copies.
Well, I think that the what was said in the emails or how many were sent and how they went out would be relevant to the introduction of this of these other two exhibits. So I would expect you just to provide printouts and then
I will
provide them
happily out. Do it. Yep.
Thank you. Does AARP in other jurisdictions or in North Dakota have any involvement with any of the other consumer groups that work in the utility area that, from my experience, quite often promote this total decoupling?
Your Honor, Ms. Jeffcoat, correct? What I can tell you is I only know anecdotally that we have had interactions with them on certain pieces of it, but like any coalition, when you work on issues, you often find what I would call strange partners. I mean, where you may agree on one piece of it, but that doesn't necessarily mean you agree on the whole host of it. And so, yes, I believe we probably have worked with them, but I can't tell you for certain where or who or how.
Has the organization taken the opposite position, meaning in favor of decoupling in other rate cases?
Your Honor, Ms. Jeffcoat, our policy, our AARP policy that is driven by our National Volunteer Policy Board is not in favor of the fully decoupling approach.
In any utility service?
In any utility service.
And do you have, as an organization, I know you alluded to the fact that we've all been making assumptions. Jerry's been making assumptions that the elderly live in houses that are leaky, and everybody's making assumptions, but do you have any information about those kinds of facts in your organization in North Dakota that you could submit?
Your Honor, Ms. Jeffcoat, off the top of my head, no. Had I thought we had that, I would have brought it today because I think it would have provided valuable. I can look, but I would tell you we've asked that question of our national staff and consultants, and I haven't seen anything yet. So, but I'll happily ask again.
And did anyone who responded to you or anyone in your office run any actual numbers for themselves about how these rates would change for your bill or a neighbor's bill? Or
Your Honor, Ms. Jeffcoat, it's part of the reason we didn't fully intervene in the case is that we didn't think we had the time and the resources at this point in time on this case to do so. Otherwise, we probably would have been an intervener.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Sure. And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, just briefly before we move forward, I want to be clear on what late-filed exhibit you were asking for.
Well, I think, and correct me, I thought there were three solicitations?
There were, and I will happily provide all copies of all three.
So there's three separate email solicitations?
Well, I think it could be one exhibit.
I would tell you I believe it could be one exhibit because the second and third email basically said, hey, did you see this? Okay. So
it would be a number, AARP.
That would be AARP exhibit number three. You can submit each of the three emails combined as the one exhibit.
And, Your Honor, just so I'm clear, how do you want me to submit those and to whom and make sure everyone gets a copy?
Well, submit it to myself and to counsel, Mr. Norrell, Mr. Kuntz, and Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle. And after the hearing, I can provide you with the
Perfect.
Addresses to
Thank
where you.
You
can submit those.
Thank you.
Commissioners, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Asvig. for coming this morning and taking the time to look into this issue and engage your members about it as well. One of the issues that we're looking at today, and Judge talked about them at the beginning. The second question of the day is: are the proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they would result in a basis of charge to customers that is just, reasonable, and without discrimination? So, when I look at the costs, the various costs of service per class, it looks to me like the current design has some of the customer classes pretty significantly subsidizing residential customers right now. And the proposal is an attempt to eliminate some of that. Do you think that there's any cause for concern that we would be not meeting this need that we have to provide rates that don't discriminate?
Your Honor, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I don't, and that's why we, on the customer class shift issue, as I said, we endorsed the PSC staff proposal put forward by Mr. Lean about we think that more equally distributes it across, and I at least thought I had heard moving towards that here's the usage, here's the cost mm-hmm. piece of it.
And on your on the second piece of here, the fixed customer charge, what I heard the company saying on the conservation side of things is that there is a lot of conservation occurring, and the volumetric charge doesn't generate enough revenue to cover their fixed costs. So in order to not force them to go back and find another way of getting that money from the customers through a higher rate in that volumetric charge, they think that this is a better way of doing that and provides more stability and also lessens the bills, the fluctuation of the bills for customers in the most extreme months. Do you think that your members see a significant difference in whether they have a flat rate that's higher or a volumetric charge that is going to be higher to compensate for what isn't included in the flat rate?
Your Honor, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I think that our members obviously registered their concern through a pretty quick turnaround online-only survey that they did have a concern about that piece of it. And just to elaborate a little bit on what I said earlier about our concern about taking away the incentive, taking away all of the incentive for conservation, is that currently 65% of the bill is the cost of gas, which, as I have heard at least and understand, that really isn't a cost to MDU because it's just a pass-through. This is what they paid, so that's what you're going to pay. There's no charge. Currently, you pay about, if my memory, I don't have it in front of me, is about 80 cents per decatherm based on for your delivery charge piece of it, which admittedly goes away under the new proposal. And then you have the fixed service charge today of approximately $9 or whatever it would be. Well, there's still, if you think about the 80 cents per decatherm, and then I think there's another 30 cents that's for the fixed service charge, 80 cents at part of your service delivery charge that can be controlled by how much volume you use is a significant incentive. There's still 35% of your bill, and I would say if 80 into, 1.12 is approximately another probably 25% of your bill, 30% of your bill that you can control through how much volume you use, that we would argue it's a disincentive. Now, let me be clear. We're not saying completely eliminate raising the fixed charge. Maybe instead of $18 or $17.50, you go to $12 and mitigate that full movement towards the piece of it in which there's still a volumetric base so that they still have some of that control over that, so that those who have taken measures would be able to realize those benefits of their efforts.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate these petitions that you sent out. And remind me, did you, because what I see here doesn't reference the any reduction in the distribution side of things. And so I don't know that if this is all the customers saw, that it provides the full picture to say whether they fully support this or not. So tell me what you provided in the email.
Your Honor, Commissioner Fedorchuk, first of all, if you look into the first paragraph, it would be technically line 1, 2, 3. It says the proposal would remove any usage component from the national natural gas distribution portion of rates that are under review of this case. So we identified it there. I would also tell you when you get the copy of the emails, it would be similar language. I can't tell you exactly off the top of my head what it said, but we did identify the fact that there would be a reduction in the volumetric or the usage, I call it a usage component here for that rate piece there. And did we probably go to the extent to describe it that the company did? No. At the same time, they certainly didn't identify the benefits of keeping the volumetric charge piece either. And so, but we did clearly state there would be a reduction in another area, but our concern is that fixed rate before you use anything and your ability to then realize savings through conservation. Some savings through conservation, not all, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I look forward to seeing the full context of what you provided to your members to better understand whether I feel like they would have gotten the full picture of what was being proposed. And that's kind of key to how much weight we can put on these kind of responses. Because if I don't feel like they got the full picture, then it's hard to put a lot of weight in 193 responses to a proposal.
Your Honor, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I apologize. I didn't think to include the copies of the emails, but I'll be sure to get them for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Josh, for your testimony and your involvement. I do have a question for counsel before I get to you. Tell me how we could address the concerns of, I got 190-some letters with personal information that I don't know that does that just become public? If somebody wants to grab all these addresses and emails, I'm not comfortable with that. How do we? Is there a way that we can do?
It does. It's account numbers that are closed by statute.
This is a question to Josh. Then is that you? Do you have concerns about this being entered into our official record by addresses and emails, knowing it becomes public information?
Your Honor and Commissioner Kolk, I would tell you I do not. You can do a basic search for almost any individual. Internet search for any individual today, and when we signed it, we told them we would be sharing it with the Public Service Commission. So, and we actually asked them for their phone number as well, which we didn't provide on here for a lot of reasons.
I just wanted to ask that question because if you wanted to, I think you could submit a letter saying that these people said this in general that would give us the same information. But I just wanted to get that question out there, and I think your response is fine. Just. In case some of these show up some way, shape, or form, it happens.
Your Honor, Commissioner Kolk, I certainly agree, and we're always looking to protect consumers. But just so you know, we were very clear that we would be sharing these, and most people are very aware of our open records and open meetings laws.
And we support those.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. You were in the room when I asked the question, I think it was with Ms. Aberle, about the... If the current plan MDU has puts some rate increase on residentials. If we go back to Mr. Lean's proposal, we then put more on what could be considered retirement living homes. I would think you'd have just as much concern about that, but I would ask you your thoughts on it.
Your Honor, Commissioner, what I would tell you is that a retirement living home is a business, and so they have a lot of expenses they have to incorporate. Certainly, the cost to heat their building is one, but I would tell you that knowing a little bit about the long-term care industry that I do, their heating bills are pretty low on the scale of what are cost drivers. It's the cost of health care and the cost of providing staff, certified licensed staffing that really drives those costs, and that in terms of the individuals, they generally aren't paying, you know, per apartment or per unit in a long-term care facility, for instance. And so if the company had concerns, I think they would have weighed it here. And so we always want to protect all individuals. But it's also one of the reasons we have always advocated at AARP for trying to keep people safely in their homes for as long as possible. Nursing homes aren't cheap. And so that's a piece of it.
Okay, perfect. The kind of following through on Commissioner Fedorchuk's line of questions, you said, I believe, that you support Mr. Lien's proposal.
On the class shift.
On the class shift, so not everything.
Not on the fixed charge.
So what fixed charge do you support?
As I said, why don't you incrementally move to it? What's $12?
So you support $12.
I think we could support $12.
Do you support $16?
Likely not.
Do you support $15? I mean, you see where I'm going with this line.
I do understand where you're going with the question. Here's what I would tell you is that any effort you as a commission would make to mitigate basically doubling, I mean, even under Mr. Lien's proposal, you go from 9 to, let's say, it's $17.50, so it's an $8.50 increase, approximately doubling the fixed piece of it. I understand there's the corresponding piece, and we got into that, and if you want me to go through it again, I will. But anything you can do to mitigate that so that individuals still have a strong component of their service delivery that is based on their usage, we would be in favor of. What I would tell you is moving from 9 to 18 seems pretty drastic. Going a third of the way there seems fairly reasonable. And if you're going to ask me for what the absolute cutoff point is, cut it in half.
Fair enough. The whole package, and I understand everybody's got different viewpoints and testimony can be viewed different ways, but it appeared in MDU's case that they acknowledged that there was a large increase in the fixed costs, but there was many other things that mitigated that. Different times a year, bill could actually be less. I mean, so do you not agree with that testimony?
I do, Commissioner Culkin. It's one of the reasons that I think, much like we hear people say all the time, instead of requiring customers and eliminating their choice through balanced billing to be able to do that, they can do almost all of those things that Ms. Aberle said would be the benefits of doing the full fixed charge through balanced billing. Now, is it probably every single one? No. But they can do that today if they want. However, you would be eliminating the choice for the customer who says, I want to do it month by month and see if I can conserve and keep my usage costs down. My understanding of balanced billing is that it evens that out for them now. And if they can do that, why wouldn't we allow them to do that and keep the usage component for those that still want to conserve and realize the full efforts of their conservation?
Okay, and I do appreciate taking time to come out because, quite honestly, as Randy and Julie and I always talk about, the more people that are involved, it's better, easier for us to make good decisions. And then when we make these decisions, it's nice to have people that can understand them and put them out to their members. So I would just say that whenever this is done, however it's done, that we're able to fully explain the context of our decision, and then you'll do whatever you want to do to your members. Either you'll like it or you won't like it. But that's, I think, the value. I would encourage AARP to intervene. If you're going to be this involved, intervene, because that puts you at the table, and whenever the decision is made, you have to buy into it or you have to say no, where now it's a setup where it seems that no matter what could happen, you could say we don't like it.
Your Honor, Commissioner Culk, what I would tell you is two things. The first thing I want to do is thank MDU because they did sit down with us and visit with us, and we raised our concerns, and we at least had the discussion, and there are many instances where I know companies wouldn't have even taken that time. So I appreciate that effort there as well. And as I said, I think you will see us as we continue to look at this issue. This is pretty new for us here in North Dakota that we would look at doing so. Just in this case, we just weren't in a position as an organization to be able to do that. And as we move forward, I think it's something we would seriously consider and take a look at. Can I promise you we will? No. But what I can tell you is we did consider it in this instance. We just didn't think with the time and resources allocated internally that we were going to be able to do it full justice, and we didn't want to hold up this case and the company from at least seeing a resolution, but we wanted to make sure that you all understood there were some concerns and have that dialogue that you mentioned.
Sure, and the I know we're outside of the hearing today, but it's good discussion. The MDU had a rate case not too long ago for electricity, and a private citizen named Jim Roche intervened by himself, no attorney, no cost, and he sat there for a week, and he definitely influenced the outcome. And he didn't have any attorneys. He didn't have any staff. He just sat as a private citizen. So while I give you the yes, you want to do a good job, but we've had private citizens come in, just sit down, and have moved the needle in the way that they wanted to. So I just said, please, you know, be involved, because the resources you have, whatever they might be, will make an impact, I think. So I think that was it. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
Thank you. Did I understand your response right, that you would support splitting that difference between $9 and $18 at $13.50?
We'd certainly like, Your Honor, Commissioner Christman, we'd certainly like to see it lower than that. But yes, that would, I believe, be something we'd could get behind. It's certainly better than $17.50 or $18 or the other options.
So of these, I can't remember the number you said, close to 200?
Mm-hmm.
Petition respondents, do you think that it would be a far smaller stack if the last sentence of that first paragraph of their message to us said that imagine being on a fixed income and having to pay $13.50 each month before using any gas at all? I mean, I'm thinking it would be pretty much the same respondents.
I think it would probably be, Your Honor, Commissioner Christman, I think it would probably be similar. I mean, I can't tell you. This is on a utility issue. I've been with AARP for a little over 2 years now, 2.5 years. We've never had any discussion with our members on utilities at all. I've had discussions with our national staff and stuff, but with our members at all. So the last time we had any significant discussions, my understanding is, talking to my colleagues and whatnot, was over 10 years ago. That we've done that. We do it daily in other states, and I think you'll see us take a greater interest here in North Dakota now that we've familiarized ourselves with the process. So I can't tell you for sure what that might have changed, just because I don't have a baseline other than what you have in front of you to determine that.
Okay. And then other than the monthly flat rate charge, you support the advocacy staff's proposal, which provides for a smaller increase for residential, and most of that additional increase is pushed on to small businesses. If MDU goes through all these addresses and emails and finds the small business owners and sends them a message wondering what their thought is on AARP's proposal to shift much of this increase to small businesses, what do you think their response would be to that?
Your Honor, Commissioner Christman, I couldn't speculate. I could tell you that I don't think anybody likes paying more, and that would be true. And I think the issue is, how do you divide it up? And what I would tell you is, the conversation I would have with any small business owner who would contact me and say that is, well, do you think it was fair that residents were going to get a 5% increase and the small businesses, I don't have it in front of me, we're going to get a lesser percentage increase? Or do you think everyone's bill should have gone up about 4% and see what the response would be? That was part of the reason we didn't like the customer class shift in MDU's original proposal, was consumers were seeing the largest increase of that new, bigger piece of the pie. And it was divvied up that consumers are paying more. And I understand the rationale is because that's costing them more in their cost of class or study piece of it. And did we do a class study to show the opposite? No. Have we done them in other states? Yes. But what I would tell you is, the discussion I would have is probably the same discussion others might have, depending upon it, is, well, do you think it was fair that one was getting a 5% increase and you were only getting a 2% increase, or do you think it's fair that it got evened out? Some would still be upset. I mean, it's going to depend on the individual, Commissioner.
And lastly, in your dialogue with Commissioner Kalt, it seemed like we're on kind of extreme ends of the residence options that people have, comparing like single unit residences compared to long-term care facilities. But in between there are places like the Waterford or places like that that aren't long-term care facilities, but are residential options that are very popular with many, many seniors. Do you know, in those types of units, do they pay each their own utility bill as they would in a, if they had single-family dwellings? Or is that more like a long-term care facility where it's just a flat rate per day or month?
Your Honor, Commissioner Christman, I do not know for sure. What I can tell you is that they have a daily or a monthly rate, and I don't know if that includes utilities or not.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mr. Kuntz, any follow-up?
No.
Mr. Norrell?
No, Your Honor.
Jeff Kotsackle?
Just one. Was there any opportunity for any of your members to provide any different kind of information to you, like support the plan because they thought it was a better idea, or was it just sign this petition or...
Your Honor, Ms. Jeffcoat, they can always email us back, and we did have one or two that did so and said, I'm not going to sign it, which was fine. But as far as the actual petition, no, the language was they could either sign it or not sign the petition once they got to that piece of it.
So you had just two that responded and said,
That I know today, there are two individuals that responded and said, I'm not going to sign.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Axvig. You may step down. Are there any other members of the public who would like to provide comment to the commission at this time? Seeing none, we'll move forward. Is there any other matter which anyone wishes to bring to the attention of the commission at this time? Mr. Kuntz, would you like to make a closing statement?
Briefly, Your Honor, I just want to address a couple of things that the ARP has brought up in the petitions. I think you can see from the testimony that the company and the advocacy staff, although there's probably some professional differences in terms of how they do their own cost study, I think we both would say that the other person's proposal is reasonable. They're both within the range of reasonableness here that the commission could, come to a conclusion on. But I do want to address this stack of petitions. I think on first blush it looks like, wow, that's a big stack of petitions. But I think when you look closer, first of all, it's pretty clear it's an advocacy piece. And I think that's demonstrated by the fact that where it's used in there, you're going to see a $9 increase before any gas is used. There's no explanation about the fact of where the break-even point is, and more importantly, if you use any gas, that price goes down. I mean, before the gas is used, this kind of it implies that if you use gas, you're going to pay even more, when in fact it's just the opposite. That difference is going to be less than that. The other thing I would point out is Montana Dakota's got about 89,000 customers. This is about 0.2% of those customers. Admittedly, they're not all ARP members or even of that age group, but it's a pretty small sample size of what our true customers are. And so what can we assume from that? Can we assume that the other percentage, that the number of thousands that got the email that didn't respond that actually support the proposal, or that they don't care, or they're indifferent to it? I mean, you might conclude that these 175,000 are all really low users, and they'll actually benefit from what's being proposed by ARP versus an average user or a person who's over 55 that might be using more than 92 decatherm, which I think is probably most of them that are probably in their own homes. I think there's another, I pointed out there's a few in here that aren't even MDU customers, which I think is, again, reflective of a response, people responding to an organization, to an advocacy piece, and the way it's worded, they're responding positively even though they're not even a customer. How many of these people live in apartments, for example, where the cost is paid by their landlord or in a nursing home or something that'll be totally unaffected? We don't know that. So I think
although it looks like a big stack of paper, I'm not sure that it's really representative of where the public opinion would be on this if they were fully advised or given really what the options are and the differences in their respective positions. And I would look more toward the input that you had at the public input sessions. That you really, there really was not an outcry of the public there opposed to the rate design that we were putting out, despite the fact that mailings went out in every customer's bill describing what we were proposing. So then you kind of peel it back in terms of, why is the AARP here? Are we making this position? Nobody even knows whether the average person 60, 65 years over is an above average user of 92 decatherm or below average user at 92 decatherm. Are they going to benefit financially or be harmed financially? Nobody has those demographics. We can't say one way or another, but if you listen to what Mr. Axvig says, it's really kind of an advocacy to a fear that going this far will discourage conservation. I would respond, really? I mean, I think there's enough incentive in a person's bill this last January to turn the thermostat down without this difference that you're going to see in the customer service charge versus on the delivery charge in this. I think there's more than enough incentive. We've seen that already. We're continuing to see conservation. The price signals from the commodity component of the rate are more than enough to encourage people to replace their furnaces when it's time to replace them with high-efficiency furnaces, high-efficiency water heaters. They add the installation in their home. So I really don't think this is going to have a discouraging effect on the conservation. What it does do is send a proper price signal to consumers. It's not going to have a significant financial effect on customers. I think in any of the analysis that you see here, you're talking a swing of a few dollars either way, but it is going to balance things out. It's going to lessen the need for the company to come back for future rate increases in the event that we continue to see conservation, which we hope we do. And so for that reason, I appreciate AARP's involvement here. I appreciate what they said, but frankly, I wouldn't put too much weight on these petitions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Norrell?
Thank you, Your Honor. Advocacy staff has no closing comments, just thanking the commissioners, council, and AARP for their time in this matter.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any statement?
No, thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Sure. Well, thanks, everybody, for the information, the thorough discussion. Another thanks to AARP. Really appreciate having that consumer component here today and conversing on behalf of real North Dakota customers. So that's extremely valuable addition to the advocacy staff who are charged with that role as well. So and you guys clearly put a lot of work into this. So I look forward to your involvement in future utility issues as well. I think that there's a lot of good information. There's some areas of agreement. I don't anticipate this taking too long. I would suggest that we'll get together here in the next week or two. We've got a pretty busy schedule next week, and so we'll just be, be determined by our schedules, not by the complication of the issues, because I think we can work through this pretty quickly and come to resolution in short order. So many thanks for all your time and your preparation, and we'll be back together again soon.
Commissioner Cole?
Thank you, Your Honor. I was listening to Julie saying a busy week this week and then next week and next week. to her point, exactly, as soon as we can get it on the schedule to sit down, I think the issues are pretty laid out, and I think a decision will come forward pretty quick. John, thank you for coming out, and Josh, I really appreciate you guys' discussion. But I would also encourage you that, we can't sit in individual commissioners' offices and talk about pending cases. You can't do that. But we all have dialogues, all three of us, with everyone all the time about issues, whether it's the Corps of Engineers, whether it's the Sierra Club, whether it's the Game and Fish. We sit and talk about general concerns and trends. And that's where I'd encourage you to to start getting your concerns out there, because it's not just telephone, or it's not just natural gas. It could be telephones. It could be effects on everything we do. And maybe one of the reasons AARP hasn't been involved in North Dakota, because quality of life here is pretty good, and everybody does a really good job keeping the electricity rates down and their gas rates down, and trying to balance all those things. So that could be it. Just thank everybody for the hearing. One thing I would take away, though, is let's all of us, whether it's AARP, MDU, or the commission, try to get as many people as we can on balanced billing, because our phones have been ringing off the hook this last 2 months, whether it's electricity or natural gas, but people get used to paying, you know, whatever it is, $9, $18, $2 in the summer, and then they start getting these $300 bills in the winter, and no matter what the rates are set up, if they're not set out to pay so much a month, it causes big problems. And so I think we should all three take that as a takeaway. So thank you all for the hearing.
Commissioner Chrisman.
I also want to thank everybody. I think MDU laid out its case very well and pretty understandable, although I did miss that transportation part of it until today. But our advocacy staff and our commission staff, everybody, I think, has been really helpful in making this clear. I want to kind of address the AARP petitions and discussion here. And we sort of, or I'll just take myself, I think, shot some holes at the way some of the information was sent out to the members. And I don't want that to seem like just a criticism. It was acknowledged that the organization hasn't done a lot of this with utility things for a number of years. And while I think it was important to point out what might have made it even more useful information than what it already is, I do want to also point out that there could be groups of business people, of agriculture people, of maybe some group that's more oriented toward more youthful people. And all of them have concerns about utilities too, and none of those are even here. And so as important as utilities are to all of us, probably they all ought to have been here, and so at least AARP was in the game, and so I hope that the critique that I had of the way some of it was distributed isn't taken as just a criticism, but helping to be constructive and get better advocacy from all types of groups in future hearings. And so I just wanted to add that. And I think, too, that this is something that we should be able to resolve relatively quickly.
Thank you, commissioners. Mr. Koontz, will you be submitting proposed findings to the commission?
I can.
Okay.
Try to see if I can have something ready, say, in about 10 business days, okay?
Okay. And we've already addressed the late filed exhibits. Montana Dakota Utilities will be submitting two late filed exhibits, MDU exhibit number 5 and MDU exhibit number 6, and AARP will be submitting one late filed exhibit, which will be AARP exhibit number 3. Mr. Axvig, any problem getting that submitted?
We should be able to do that today.
Okay, thank you. Anything further from any of the parties? If not, we'll go ahead and close the record in this case. Thank you.